This is Laura Hamburg with Promise of Paradise, back to the land oral histories of Mendocino County. Today we'll be hearing from Norman Duvall of the town of Mendocino. Norman was a four-term Mendocino County supervisor during the building code wars of the 70s and 80s. It was a time when the county pushed to outlaw the very houses the back to the landers called home. It was also a time when tensions were high, building inspectors might be armed, planning files went missing. The cabins that the counterculture community built were targeted and declared illegal. The message was clear. Hippies and beatniks weren't welcome. Norman Duvall and others were at the forefront of this battle. Norman's leadership helped forge a compromise with the county, and many hippie cabins were then brought up to code. The Back to the Landers were here to stay. It's May 11th, and my name is Laura Hamburg, and I'm here with Norman Duvall and Kate Magruder. And we're in the town of Mendocino for Promise of Paradise, Oral Histories of Mendocino County. Can you introduce yourself, please?
Norman Duvall.
Norman Duvall, do you like to be called Norm or Norman?
Norman. Thank you.
Let's begin by talking a little bit about your background. When and where were you born?
Hollywood, California, 1940.
How would you describe yourself as a young person?
Very independent. I lost my mother at a real young age when I was 11, and everything fell apart soon after. And that was in Laguna Beach. So those events certainly formed, the sense of security, stability, safety. All of that comes into the picture. And that was in Laguna Beach. So it was like on the Mendocino coast, you get to these geographic places and you're just stuck. You just don't want to move on. Well, that was that first relationship with the coast. There's parts of, I can remember during the war, where we were in Laguna, just on the other side of the hill was the El Toro Marine Base. And there was practice bombing on Coronado Island. And we had blackout curtains and taped over headlights. It was a very, and everybody was doing something. Everybody was saving something for the war effort. So everybody's pitching in. Newspapers are unfolded. The grease goes back to the meat counter. You have so many coupons to buy the basics, and when they're gone, that's gone. So those events formed me in many ways. So I was able to become more independent, and that gets us up to October of 62, when Khrushchev and Kennedy were right at loggerheads. The city went quiet. Nobody honked a horn. Everybody was polite to each other. The Bay Area had been ringed with Nike missiles. It was a hot spot. And if there were rockets out of Cuba, was Silicon Valley a target? Who knows? So I was meeting a number of people, usually every night, at a family-style restaurant, appropriately named Red's. So we were all sitting at this table having another plate of spaghetti, softly talking about what was going on. And one said, war is crazy. Another one person said, well, only city people create war. Somebody else mentioned, well, let's go to the country. Where? And somebody said Casper. And I had no idea where Casper was. No idea at all. Norman, you have the truck, so you get the piano. We left at 5 o'clock the next morning. It took 9 hours to get up here. We finished a film with Bruce Bailey on the streets of Mendocino back in 1962. It was a remarkable weekend, and Mendocino had that allure and that draw as much as Laguna Beach. So I felt home again.
Norman, this cast of characters you described in the piano in the back of the truck and driving up at 5 a.m., how would you describe the group? Like, what kind of friends were these? Beatniks? Were they artists? Who did you hang with?
I would call them beatniks. What's the difference between a beatnik and a hippie? Beatniks arrived here with books and tools and fully expected to be here. When hippies arrived, they did not compare the two. They just went to one. In 62, 63, 64, we would gather together and sit around and talk out the books that we're reading. Those days are long, long gone. Helping somebody build a shed or a small barn or a pump house, I don't see much of that happening. You know, the coast is going through yet another change. We can get into the politics of it, the unfairness of it. There's a lot happening.
Well, let's step back just for a moment and look at how you characterize yourself as a beatnik. And let's talk about the difference between the beatnik and then the hippies that you saw here. And if you felt aligned or unaligned, those two communities.
Well, I think as opponents to war, both of them are very much connected and the same. So I didn't follow music on the coast. We had a number of real rock stars here. You know, to learn more about that, talk to Nick Wilson. So I did not follow Mendo music and spent most of my time involved in trying to protect the town. So sorry to hear people wanting to call it a village. You know, that connotes to me that they just want to turn it into a shopping center. So we've gone from what was culture and arts in the 70s to entertainment, weed and wine so many years later. You know, why are we doing this? The county is doing virtually no code enforcement in town of Mendocino. Vinyl windows are not permissive with the Historical Review Board. The county is under contract, basically, with the state and federal government to protect the town of Mendocino, and they're not doing it. And a number of people are getting ready to go to the Coastal Commission and start to raise a real issue that Mendocino County is not protecting its golden goose.
When you were here in 1963 after the Cuban Missile Crisis and you arrive, Casper, you'd never heard of this town, but it reminded you a little bit of the coastline of Laguna Beach. Can you kind of paint a picture of the different kinds of groups of people? How did it feel and look to you? You had the old timers, you had the beatniks, you had the hippies, the timber and fishing industry is sputtering. What did you see back then?
We were outcasts. We were aliens. And as time went by, there was real pushback. And I've got to say, Stuart Tagoning, thank you. That population in the early 60s, we stood out like sore thumbs.
Why?
We were probably more dressed like you would in Berkeley. And then I started a little company to dig water wells. I got a contract to tear down the Holmes Lumber Mill in Eureka. So there was opportunity everywhere. So if you wanted a job at $3.50 an hour, gas was 35 cents a gallon. You could buy an acre of land east of Casper for $1,000. You could rent a house from the Casper Lumber Company for $50 a month, or you could go up to the Union Landing Hotel and have a room for $75 a year. I went to the Casper Bargain Center and outfitted the kitchen, most of what I still have, for $5. So the opportunity was, and there were far more empty sheds, loose lumber laying around than there is now.
So as the timber and the fishing industry were falling on hard times during that time, there were young people leaving because of these industries that are being affected. At the same time, there's other young people coming in.
Frank McMichael, second district supervisor, once he said, our best export is our kids. Fewer of them are going to university and coming back. Using kids' data, which is a source for me on information for CASA, Court-Appointed Supportive Advocates, I look at a lot of charts, numbers, to get some idea about kids. And only 25% of our high school graduates are taking the SATs, and their scores are 25% below the state average. Our kids reflect their adults. When more and more adults are going to entertainment, weed, and wine, the kids are going to do the same thing. There will be exceptions. There will be a few. There seems to be a feeling of expectation. They're going to be okay. And some of the younger people I've hung out with, I've asked them, why aren't you pissed? Why aren't you angry at the world we're pushing you into? And the response I got was, you can't change anything anyway. By being disconnected, they're not showing really how they really feel. They don't want to vote. They don't want to register. I guess they don't want to be counted in the census. And they sure don't want to get their hands dirty.
when you were young and starting out in the mid-60s, what did you care about? What did you want to change, or the group of people you were with?
Well, the first thing we got onto was PG&E, and here we are again. They wanted to get approval for a nuclear power plant on the north end of Point Arena.
What year was this?
1960, 62. They had already begun one in Bodega Bay. There's the pit for the reactor. A number of us got here in our 20s or later 20s. And because of the PG&E issue, just the extensive logging that was taking place, we were pulled into civic awareness very, very quickly. And we also had a number of us had been protesters against the war, which was still very active. We got on planning committees and began to make statement. Again, I comment that we were in our mid-20s doing this, or early 20s, and we're not seeing that today. This system that we have is really held together by the volunteers. If we don't give them the support, and if we don't listen to them, they won't be there. They're going to be gone. Without volunteers, we're missing a generation already of people in their late 30s, later 40s. The system desperately is going to need them. And the more of the public television that you watch of how our planning commission functions, they don't have any training in making an agenda. Too many of the organizations, you can find this in the Coast District Hospital, the Historical Review Board in Mendocino, the minutes are not being prepared in time or being approved month after month. I'm seeing soft spots in the structure, and I'm sure that Ted Williams, for one, also sees it. We've got plus minus 1,300 employees. That's a lot of numbers. County is about $200 million in arrears, plus minus what is due to the retirement fund. Mm-hmm. The three primary ways for the county to get revenue is the transit occupancy tax, the sales tax, and property tax. The people in Mendocino feel very strongly that if the county is going to extract all of this money in the town to go outside the town in form of taxes, now why aren't they getting more services? So there's any number of violations in the town, maybe rightfully so, because the county is just shot straight up with the fee-for-service concept that everything will be paid for out of application fees. But in reality, those who come to the counter in the planning department and just ask a question, basically they're being subsidized by people getting an application.
I want to take you back and talk about the origination story of how the building code wars got started. What was the political climate like? We have all these, you know, hippies, bohemians, beatniks, or back to the land settlers. And was it a cultural war that started it?
It was an opportunity. You turn and look everywhere here, there was an opportunity. And later in 1963, I was able to buy a house west of Highway 1 above Fort Bragg for $5,000. Small house, but it had hot and cold running water. Much better than the tool shed I'd been in. The wood was there. The land was inexpensive. The challenge, and there were people like Harold Brayton, that without Harold, a lot of us would have been colder, wetter, more hungry. As it was back in the 60s, you didn't get food stamps. You got commodity foods. Mm-hmm. Stand in line at the Army Reserve, mm-hmm. get another can of peanut butter. But there was work, really, for anybody that wanted to work hard. I started a company to hand dig water wells. We collected timber and sold it. We brought up seconds from Agrolite Bronson. They make tempered glass shower doors. They were selling for $5 a piece or next to nothing. But that's why you see so many of these tempered glass windows mm-hmm. from that era of construction.
Why was there a crackdown on the so-called illegal dwellings? What happened?
Oh, Mendocino County got a building code. I don't think they had had one before. And I was one of the first people to get red tag. I had no idea you needed a permit, but I did. And they won that one. But some years later, I was building an inspected, civil engineered house for my uncle, Bill Ames. And I had to make steps to went up to a little landing that went up to a little deck and went down to another deck on another angle. I'm not a real easygoing carpenter. That was a big deal for me. And the building inspector came and measured the stair height, found a quarter inch difference. Some months before in Sonoma County, there was the beginning of a building code war and a health issue. And the county of Sonoma ran a bulldozer through Morningstar, which was a commune. And so there were a lot of hot tempers about people that were coming into the region, starting to pound nails. So the building inspector, finding this error in my stairs tread, he said, "You'll have to take them out." And I looked at him, and he turned on me, and he said, "We got rid of people like you in Sonoma County, and we'll get rid of people like you here." To be welcomed by Stuart Dragoning, Harold Brayton, Don Guthrie at Baxman's, there were a little bit of a welcome, but not that much. When the building code wars really heated up, I called it Mendocino County's white-black issue. We don't have blacks to kick around, so let's go get some leftover beatniks and some new hippies. And MCPOA was the first organization to push back citizens who got together and began an offense. MCPOA is Mendocino County Property Owners Association. Well, the board took some interest in this and established LULU, the Land Use Law Enforcement Unit, and then had an assistant attorney in the county council's office just for codes. Well, things heated up all the more, and it wasn't just building codes. It was also the desire to live together and the desire to have more than one house on a parcel.
And there's a little talked about situation that came out of Santa Barbara where there were multiple people not sharing the same last name.
Yes, you're speaking of the city of Santa Barbara versus Mary Adamson. And up to the time of Mary Adamson's final decision in the lawsuit, the number of counties and cities had established the rule of five, which meant to them that no more than five surnamed people can be in the same house. And that was interpreted to say that the house is now an apartment house. This is not a family, single family residence. What is a family? Well, I don't know which way it fell on the Superior Court level, but it went to the appeals court, and that didn't resolve it either, and then it went to the California State Supreme Court. Now, Rose Byrd, appointed by the governor, made the final decision. She was Chief Justice at the time. The rule of five was thrown out, so the idea of having a group of people living at one address, all of a sudden, that's a world changer.
So after it was thrown out, you could live together under one address.
Yes, but the 60s had taken place, the 70s, and some of the 80s before that decision finally came down. And Rose Byrd basically defined the word family. In her opinion written for the court, she said that, let me get this right, a family, you're a family if you eat dinner together. There you go. You may recall that I was in office for less than 6 months before they began a recall effort. And that went on for much of the first year. I was no more welcome by some in the county in the late 70s, I felt, when I got here in the early 60s.
When the inspector came and said you're a quarter inch off on the stairs, it was like an in-law that you were building for Uncle Bill?
He had had a stroke. There wasn't anywhere near the amount of care. I got a call from Don Hahn, his doctor, and he said, we've had him for 10 days. That's all we can do unless you're going to pay for him to be in the hospital. So bundled him up and took him home and then got him back to his place, and then we were building a caretaker's cabin. there were a number of people that were caring for elder family, older friends. You see it, these small apartments or whatever are tacked on. Another bedroom without a bathroom is tacked on.
When he said you got to rip out the stairs and start over, what did you do and what did you do with Uncle Bill?
Nothing. I didn't take out the stairs and he never came back. Alton Graham, if he's not the mayor of Albion, but he's certainly Albion's jester. There was a time when Roland Feldman, the chief building inspector, wanted to get to be armed, to be a building inspector.
Armed with a gun?
Yes. And it was pretty obvious that the county wanted these owner builders out of here and be gone. So Alan Graham, this is what is said to me to be true. Alan Graham goes up to the counter that used to be in the old courthouse, which is now the town hall in Fort Bragg. Jim Fite was the building inspector. And Alan walks up to the counter, puts a 45 automatic down on the counter, pointing towards him, and tells Jim Fite to pick it up and use it because I have one too. There was such hostility between the governed and the governance. And so Alan has one as well. And he says, I'm going to count to three. And Jim Fite is just absolutely terrified. Alan Graham continues the count. One, two, three, squirt. Water pistol.
This is Captain Fathom.
Yeah. So, this guy thought he had seen the end. He left the county employ immediately.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. And I was talking to a building inspector who works in Mill Valley, what he thought about being armed. And he says, you got to understand, building inspectors are very disliked. And some people get really nasty.
Well, let's talk about, for example, Roland Feldman.
Well, he certainly had peculiar ways about him. And he put a one-way mirror into the old planning building office, what used to be on the corner of Bush and Logap. He put a one-way mirror there so he could look at the people coming to the counter.
What era is this?
He was the building inspector of 81, 82. But the strangest thing that he did before he disappeared was that all of the records in the Mendocino Coast Planning Department Coast Office in Fort Bragg up to 1973 disappeared. So the county has no choice but to, if you can prove that it existed, it's pre-existing. So that changes the setback requirement, that changes what I've been doing consulting, helping people figure some of this stuff out. And if you can go back in time to show, even on the assessor's cards for each property, that existed, you have a chance of being able to get it legalized by the county.
Currently?
Yes. I speak plannerese. The county trained me well to do land use planning consulting.
Mm-hmm. So it's a tense time. Inspectors feeling like they might even want to be armed. The people that are the settlers in the hills that have built these dwellings feel under attack. Almost a determined effort to sort of shoo them out. So now what needs to happen?
We can be very thankful that the Mendocino County Board of Supervisors has not ever divided, as had Humboldt County, their forest lands into 48 parcels all over the place. We have 160-acre parcels. They at 40 have far more habitation in the forest than do we. Mendocino County has the challenge of what to do with people that cannot get a job to pay to maintain their properties. Many are going towards indoor and outdoor grows. The county has set a situation up so with such fragmentation, frustration, and expense that a number of growers are just bypassing the permit process. And I've now heard one opinion that 3/4 of Mendocino production is going black market. I've got to ask, did the county ever really want to see marijuana legalized in Mendocino County? A lot of the county changed when the Board of Supervisors went from a CAO officer to a CEO executive style. Yeah, they wanted to do that with the idea of having more agency function rather than department by department. What's the difference between a CAO, Chief Administrative Officer, or a CEO? Well, remember Ken Lay at Enron? He was the CEO of Enron that he drove into bankruptcy and the loss of retirement for the employees fund. And a CEO has virtual total control of what's going on. And the board of directors of Enron didn't know anything. The board of supervisors is being all but isolated away from the issues. I understand Ted Williams has been sanctioned by the CEO for talking to department heads or employees. When I was on the board with the CAO, we interviewed candidates for appointment. We were in touch with the departments, and the people of the 3rd District have every appreciation that Jim Eddy, 5-term supervisor, was in very good terms with the department of what then was Building and Grounds Department, took care of District 3, bridges and roads just fine. This idea of isolating the Board of Supervisors from the daily function. Why did they do it? I don't think they wanted to work that hard. On my old board, we had differences all the time. Nobody was having a good time. But we met every Tuesday, and we met every other Monday on planning. Why would we put so much time into planning? Well, remember, in 1978, Warner Chabot, a part-time carpenter here in the town of Mendocino, representing himself and the public, sued the county over its general plan. No Mendocino Superior Court judge would hear the case. Judge John Golden was dispatched by judicial counsel to come to and sit in Mendocino and hear this case. And John Drummond, county counsel, representing the county for the planning issues, was asked to bring the county's general plan into the court. Well, on the day that this was to be shown to the court, it was one dolly after another of cardboard boxes. You couldn't find anything anywhere. So Judge Golden listened to the county, awarded Warner, the carpenter, attorney's fees for having done an excellent job. And Golden then, till the new general plan was approved by the court, the Office of Planning and Research, and the public and the Board of Supervisors, that no application or approval of variances, 2-for-1 splits, major subdivisions, use permits, he locked down the county. Later, there was a hardship clause that people could get access to, but they really had to show that it was a hardship.
So it was a blanket moratorium.
For 3 years.
What did that mean, grinding to a halt?
There weren't going to be any subdivisions on any land in the county, except the cities.
Until what? What had to be resolved?
The new general plan had to be drafted, and then after that, the new local coastal program had to be completed as an amendment to the general plan. And then, if that's not enough, you've got the town of Mendocino plan, which is a totally unique animal that is drawing people from everywhere and pushing people who live here further and further into the outback, wherever they might go. And the irony of some of this is that the county, if you have a B&B that they just discovered and found out about, at one time a shed, one time there might have been a shop, but then turned into a little mini dwelling, and now it's very cute. Never done with a permit. But if you get it approved to be a B&B, and you sign up to pay the tax, and if you might owe some tax in arrears, if you're willing to do all of that and write those checks, they will approve your business.
And what do you see is wrong with that?
Well, they say that having a smoke alarm, they say that having some safety standards, because people expect at least something plus minus the standard. So if the lighting is not proper, if the fire extinguisher is not there, do I think people should be allowed to build wherever they want to? And I'm an absolute no. I think as there's more and more of us, we have to be more concerned about how well we manage what's left. I'm depressed when I see the fiscal realities of Mendocino Coast District Hospital, having their problems with Ukiah The Adventists set up some kind of a relationship with St. Joe's in Santa Rosa. Are we going to be able to keep these hospitals open? We think about a third of potential clients, patients from Mendocino Coast District Hospital are either going to Willits or Santa Rosa.
I think that I'd heard nearly 7 hospitals had closed during those early times, during your early years on the board.
Talmadge was open when I got here. We got it into a situation where we had to take a worker off to Talmadge. And it was beautiful. It was like an East Coast campus. It was stunning. And it was just going out. It was going to get locked up. It was offered to the county for $1. And the county turned it down.
Why?
I think because Talmadge is not Ukiah and the county seat. It was just that kind of don't look for reasons. It just is. So we could have had an ample admin center. We could have had a new jail, maybe, if. Although when I looked at the jailhouse that they had for Talmadge, just awful, really awful. It's a good thing that it did get closed. I think what was going on there was that they were locking a lot of patients. There might have been some that were able to wander around and ramble on the grounds. But now the county is $1 million out of balance from last year's budget. So they're going into a deficit. Well, how do they make up a deficit? Correct me if I'm wrong, but actually they're drawing on the money of others that's in trust in the Treasurer's Department. Or they're selling off and liquidating bonds that they buy, sometimes on a daily basis, sometimes a month or 3 months, 6 months. You can buy notes for 90 days or whatever. Is there a chance of to put the money somewhere else? Or you have roofs that you need to fix or whatever. Basically, without increasing the revenue to the county, with more need than ever, unless we have a huge change in government, you ask, what's wrong with building a cottage without a permit? If everybody had 5 acres, I'd agree with you. But we're seeing more people being packed on top of each other. I think all the more need for safety, health issues.
When you're looking back at a time where things did sort of work because they were contested during the time of the building cold wars, let's go back there for the moment. What was a Class K home? And then take us from Class K to clean slate.
Miku Owona, along with many people, saw a number of things happening. The Board of Supervisors in the mid-70s had appointed the BLUR, Building Code and Law Unit. So there was BLUR 1 and then later BLUR 2. The board had more or less sent Cimolino back to the coast to figure it out. And people wanted to use salvaged lumber, not necessarily have it grade stamped. But that was a big change. People felt that if we want to live in a house with fewer regulations, that's our right. So even with clean slate, when changes came, they had to meet the electrical, the plumbing, the septic, the mechanical, the stoves. But if you wanted to have 20-inch on centers, you were able to do that. So that's the Class K.
Class K.
It was like cabin class.
And the county at that point, after much debate, discussion, and legal action, was going to allow for Class K.
Yes. Every county could impose the right to build such if with a majority vote. We had to do this by ordinance, and every ordinance has an intent section up at the top of it. So John Drummond, the county council, came back with some very illustrative comment that it's much safer for people to live in houses than not have houses. So it passed, and it's come under some scrutiny. The county wants to see more inspections, plural, which will drive up prices even further.
And Norman, is the ordinance, the Class K ordinance, is still in effect in the county today?
Yes, and I've tried time after time to get clean slate back. What's clean slate? Just a couple of months into my first term, numbers were sitting around on the grass at the Beaujolais and trying to say, how can we do it? We said, we're just going to do it.
Do what? Tell us about it.
Let's change the county. And the idea was to make sense out of what had happened and figure out what you could do about it. Half the records are missing on the coast. What was there, what isn't, it's in the county planning department has virtually no relationship with the assessor's office. That address card for your place is very privileged. Only by court process can it be divulged or by the owner or approval by the owner. So the planning office just can't walk down and take a look at where these other buildings might be. And I think the assessor, with that information, actually does a pretty detailed job. I've been looking at a number of property cards with owner's permission. The detail is very interesting.
Remind me again, the description and defining of clean slate.
It addressed the planning issues. It addressed the building code issues. It addressed the Department of Transportation, CDF, and they exist. So now what are we going to do? Well, for a while with Blur 1 and 2, if you stress tested the house, if you could collapse it, it obviously couldn't be passed, could it? Good thinking by the county.
Wasn't there a story of somebody who had a stress test on their yurt or their dome?
Yeah, that was Nat Bingham. So he started at the bottom and he just built an outer shell of this thing. It went a long way. If you couldn't collapse this dome, it was very convincing. There's a lot of sandbags there.
I'm still not sure I understand clean slate.
If you made a commune, mm-hmm. and you've built five different houses, and you've got one septic tank and it's sized for 8,800 gallon. Well, clean slate would get into the process, EnviroHealth would come out and say, no, if you're going to have five cabins, you need this size of system. So you got to get that done. Each of the cabins would be brought up to electrical standards, mechanical standards for the stoves. But if you only in forest land, you're only allowed one house and a second sub-house with a use permit. Well, none of that had happened. There are people living everywhere. The counties thought, well, let's at least get it legal. Let's get it safe as best as we can and leave them alone. It only lasted for 18 months.
Oh, wow. I didn't realize that. If I describe this, and tell me where I get it wrong. We have no building code that we're aware of in Mendocino County. Then we have the theft of at least the coast files. Yeah. Then we have this influx of people who have built all over in the land, salvaging, tearing down the old hotels and the bridges and making their marvelous little cabins. There's this sort of culture war against these people out in the hills. Planning department cracks down, develops an ordinance called Class K. And then, am I getting this right at all?
No, partially.
Okay.
You're right up to that point.
Help me.
Class K was initiated by Mika Wawona. But what really happened was that it came out of Jerry Brown's office. It was attached to some bill here or there, and it slipped right in. So we got Class K at about the same time as Clean Slate, at about the same time as Mary Adamson, Santa Barbara. And so there was a real change happening. The Rule of Five was gone. Grade stamp lumber was gone. 18-inch on centers was gone. The neighbors certainly were happy to clean up some of the septic issues. There was a period of enlightenment. There was a renaissance.
Can you give some examples, Norman, of the renaissance, of that feeling?
It's interesting. I've thought you could have an endless number of lyceums of discussion. As I know the county, a number of people just want to have a meaningful conversation. I hope that is true throughout the county. But we've got to get back in conversation again. We've got to get the under 40 crowd to want to join us.
Clean Slate was 18 months, did you say?
Clean Slate was an 18-month program.
Is it almost like an amnesty? I mean, you have to come up to code, but you can come to the department and say, this is what I have, what do I need to bring it up to regulation standard?
As I understood the county's amnesty program, I'd call it a shell game, because the only thing they're doing is giving you a break on the building permit, the application fee. Everything else stands the same in this last amnesty program that they had. So, and amnesty means that they will not bill you, invoice you for the 100% fine. So if you didn't get a permit, you need a permit for XYZ, and that's going to cost you, $125. Well, because you didn't get a permit to begin with, that now becomes $250.
How do you think that moment in time, Class K, helped shape the Back to the Land movement?
It gave a meaningful reality of security, stability, join the neighborhood. You're going to be here for a while.